I screened a film by Jia Zhangke last semester, Ashes Purest White. And so this is kind of, I guess, an unofficial second installment in the unofficial Jia Zhangke series. And I'll talk a little bit about the director tonight. I'll talk about the movie, some of the themes you're going to see, and then hopefully have some time to answer questions. Let's go ahead and get started. Jia Zhangke is one of China's most popular directors today. He is born around 1970, so he's hitting 50 this year. He studied at Shanxi University, and he's from Shanxi Province originally. That's where he came from. And so Shanxi Province features in his films, and it features in his life. For those of you who saw Ashes Purest White, the first and last parts of that movie were set in Shanxi Province. And then the part in the middle that was set along the Yangtze was, I think, also set in Fengjie, if I remember correctly. He is what's classified as a sixth-generation director. In China, Chinese film scholars have kind of divided directors up by the period of time in which they start making movies. And sixth-generation directors usually are said to begin making films somewhere around 1996. It's kind of a loose term, but some things that you can put together with it are that these are directors who usually work independently. They're not usually directors who work for the studios. Oftentimes they make underground movies, so they have kind of a complex relationship with the government. Most of their films are shot on digital footage or digital media. There's a lot of handheld camera work and location shooting. So this makes it facilitates the independent nature of filmmaking for them. They tend to focus on real life subjects. They have some of them, particularly Jia Zhangke, has kind of a documentary look, although his films, and he's made documentaries. In fact, there's a sister movie called Dong, which was made at the same time as he was making this film, also in Fengjie, with the same actor, Han San Ming. He was also in that film too. But that's a documentary. This is a feature film, so it's a little bit different. This is his big prize-winning film. This is the film for which he won the Golden Bear, the Golden Lion, wrong film festival, the Golden Lion in 2006. And he himself founded a film festival. It's one of the new and emerging film festivals in China set in Pingyao. And Pingyao is an old traditional Chinese town that's largely geared to tourism that is in his home province of Shanxi also. Now, some things that you'll see in Zhang's movies that are pretty consistent. The first is that there's a tendency to look at massive changes taking place in Chinese society. And in this film, we're going to see environmental issues, we're going to see social issues, demographic issues, things like that. And I'll talk more about that as we go forward. He tends to focus on reality. That ties in with this kind of documentary look to his films, with his interest in kind of social commentary and social critique. And he's very interested in issues that involve alienation or disorientation from society. On the screen are his major works. And as I mentioned, we screened Ashes Purest White last semester. Hopefully we'll get some more of his films in semesters to come. About Still Life, this film was shot entirely on location in the city of Fengjie on the Yangtze River. It was filmed in high definition digital video, which generally speaking will give us a clearer image. Film tends to have sometimes a softer look. This tends to have a little bit of a harder look, which kind of, I think, facilitates this kind of critique of reality and its documentary look. Unlike his earlier films, this film is what we might call an official film. That is to say that he got permission from the government to make it. Some of his early films he just made. He didn't bother getting permission. He made them, you know, on the fly, on the street, using handheld cameras, digital cameras. This one was made with approval from the government and with financing from the Shanghai Film Studio. So that's a little bit different from his earlier films. And his argument for that one was, well, the social changes that are brought about, that this film is looking at are things the government really cannot deny. And so this film was screened without any censorship, without any intervention in China. It was not banned. Final feature is that some critics have noted a style in Jia Zhangke's work that's similar to the great Italian director Michelangelo Antonioni. in particular, his photographing of kind of cities under destruction, his use of pans, that is where the camera moves from left to right or right to left, and we'll see that function a great deal in this movie. Now, the background, the social background, is the construction of, I was going to put these in reverse order. Here they go. I apologize for pixelation, so use your imagination to clear up the pixels, I apologize. But in 1992, China finally approved a project that had been proposed right around the turn of the century by Sun Yat-sen, the father of modern China. For years, there had been plans to build a dam along the Yangtze River to control flooding, to generate electricity, for a variety of reasons. And that project was proposed by Sun Yat-sen. It was then proposed by the nationalist government after his death and championed by Chiang Kai-shek. The Japanese during World War II, or the War of Resistance, or anti-Japanese war, had a plan. And then after the war, the Americans also helped facilitate a plan for the Republican government. Well, it wasn't until after the death of Mao and the rise of Jiang Zemin that the dam was approved. The construction got underway around 1994, and around 2006, the dam is completed, and they begin filling up, creating a reservoir behind the dam. What that means is that the water level behind was pushed up, rises above the Yangtze River. Unlike in maybe other dams you've seen where there's a large lake or reservoir behind the dam, there is that, but it's so large that it extends hundreds of kilometers up the Yangtze River, which is China's longest river, the world's, third longest river, I think, after the Nile and the Amazon. Anyway, the dam is built, and it creates this displacement because now the water level's rising. And in the city of Fengjie, what that means is that they're going to have to move people out. And over the course of a period of several years, about 1.3 million people, I think, are dislocated from small communities and medium-sized cities that are built and exist along the Yangtze River. And Fengjie is one of them, and that's the community that that the director, Jia Zhangke, is filming in. And to go back that slide, the impact is this, and this is the gorge that they talk about. You'll see they talk about Kuimen. Kuimen is the name of a gorge. It's also known as the Chutang Gorge. And it's the first gorge you hit as you come south from Chongqing. It's said to be one of the most beautiful. At its narrowest back in the day, it was about 500, I think it's about 500 feet wide. Maybe it's 50 meters, I can't remember, but it's smaller. The one on the image on the left, I think, is an earlier image, whereas the one on the right, you can see the water level has risen up now and covered up those lower areas. And that's one of the things that happens all along the area where the gorge was built, or where the gorges existed and where the water level rises because of the construction of the dam. The film is made up of three parts. The first part is focusing on a man from Shanxi province, the director's actual real-life home province, who comes to this area to look for his wife, who's left him 10 years before. She's left him, they've been divorced, but he wonders what's ever happened to her, so he comes to look for her. He makes a living as a coal miner, and so he gives up that job and comes here looking for his wife. Interestingly enough, the name of the character, Han Sanming, is the same name as the actual person. And to add an element of realism to it, he's the cousin of the director, Jia Zhangke. Nonetheless, in the film, he functions as a fictional character. That segment makes up the first third of the film. Then the film shifts to a second character, Shen Hong, who works as a nurse. She's also from Shanxi province, and she's coming to look for her husband who left her 2 years earlier. So we have two cases of families that are kind of fracturing, that are fragmenting apart. And she is played, and she meets her husband. He's now very wealthy and successful, confronts him, and then asks for a divorce. And then the film, that actress, Zhao Tao, is Jia Zhangke's wife, and she's been in almost all of his films. Certainly his films from, I think, Platform, which is made around 2000, up to the present. Now, the last segment brings us back to Han Sanming, And he's now finds his wife. She's working as basically an indentured servant on a boat, and he leaves. It's not clear what he's going to do, but the impression is he's going back home. He's going to work as a miner with the idea of buying out her indenture, so she will no longer be a servant for someone, for this boat captain. Now, framing all this, interestingly enough, are some elements that seem to come out of like nowhere, and these are elements that we call magic realism. They're things that are not part of the reality of the film, and for most of us, not part of reality as we know it. The first one occurs and is the vehicle that shifts, that makes the first shift from the Han Sanming story to the Shen Hong story. And you'll notice a UFO just streaks across the scene. He watches it, and then the film cuts, and we see her following it along, and then the film continues onward. A little bit later, we have an instance of, you'll find a modernist building that, it's just a building that, this is a city, everything's being destroyed, I guess I should explain. Because of the rising water levels, most of Fengjie, or old parts of Fengjie, were going to be submerged. So they basically tore everything down. Things that were historical, they relocated to an area above ground, about 8 kilometers away, and the rest they're tearing down. And as you watch the movie, you'll see that they'll have high water lines marked. You'll see them painting like lines that'll show where the water level is. That was actually done. And that shows where scientists are predicting the water level behind the dam will rise to. In some cases, I'll get to this a little bit later, there's a character, Chai, which we'll see, that indicates that building is to be torn down. It's been condemned, essentially. So there's some magic realist features. And one of them includes this modernist building, which suddenly just takes off like a rocket ship. What does all this mean? That's a good question. That's something to think about, isn't it? Now, the theme that kind of goes throughout this whole movie is this idea of destruction. And in China, this theme is important because as China modernizes, it moves out of, it moves from being a country that's primarily rural to a country that's much more urban. In order to help areas, major cities like Beijing or Shanghai, Nanjing or Wuhan to grow, they have to actually tear down areas of housing, which have existed in some cases for hundreds of years, for centuries. And this creates a tremendous amount of displacement. First, it destroys historical buildings, but second, it means the complete relocation of all these people who are living in these areas. This is not due to flooding, it's simply due to a desire to build higher density housing and newer housing and be able to house more people. And this is happening throughout China, and it's a theme that shows up in many Chinese movies, particularly the films made by the same generation, the sixth generation of directors, Zhang Yang, Zhang Yuan, and Feng Xiaogang being others. But this is something which is very important in this film, and the focus here is just in this one area. And you'll notice as you watch the movie, Han Sanming gets a job working as a demolitionist, because that seems to be the major form of employment, where you'll see men with sledgehammers just wailing away at refineries and brick buildings and whatever they needs to be torn down. And the city you'll see is surrounded by rubble. The city is kind of, this rubble level is rising in the city because of all this destruction that's taking place. And this seems to be a focus of Feng Xiaogang. He's very interested in this process of rubble. And let me give you I want to stop just a second and then go to there it is. I'm just going to show you a very short clip that comes from the movie. It's one of the most beautifully framed scenes you'll get. What you see here, they've now, I think, gone downstream a bit to a larger city where I think they're looking for the protagonist's daughter, their daughter. That's Han Sanming and his ex-wife. And we see we're in a building that's already being torn down. So we have this framing of rubble, and you can see the bricks exposed. And then we have behind it areas in the foreground that are being torn down as well. Watch this scene briefly. So that's probably the most dramatic, one of the most dramatic images, and probably one of the most beautifully framed. And what I mean by that is that the way the filmmaker has use that space that we would associate with the viewfinder, the screen, whatever, the image on screen. He's very carefully lined it up so that we have the two protagonists to the side, and then the focus really isn't on them. It's on what really the film's about, which is this idea of destruction. Now, this was part of what was necessary, again, to get people away from areas that were going to be flooded. Obviously, the government didn't want them drowned, so people are relocated. In many cases, they were compensated, but below market value, and this created tremendous senses of frustration among people there. And it's played out a little bit. You'll see the innkeeper, the guy who runs the little guest house that Han Sunming stays at, is relocated as the film, in the last third of the film, and he's kind of this representation. You'll see a few other characters relocated as well. Now, in the notion of modernity, particularly in the modernity that we associate with mid-19th century, I think of Baudelaire in France, there's this idea of creative destruction. That is to say that you would destroy something that was old, but build something new and better on top of it. It's also something that mingles the kind of the eternal, kind of the eternal with the, and the lasting, with the evanescent and transient. Here we don't see any creativity, it's just destruction. There's nothing that really replaces it in the film, or at least Zhao Zhongkai doesn't seem to say that. So that's one of the significant factors. And of course in the environment, the impact on the environment isn't really foregrounded, but it really, I think, is what the film's all about, but in a very subtle way. As you watch the movie, you'll notice that while people are important, the film, the camera doesn't spend a lot of time looking at them. It's a distracted camera. The camera's usually panning and looking at natural landscapes, looking at scenes of rubble, but there are lots and lots of scenes of the river itself, which makes the river as much a protagonist in many respects as the characters. And this is an interesting twist. One of my mentors at UCLA used to comment that truly modernist literature, in truly modernist urban literature, the city was a protagonist. Here for Zhao Zhongke, the protagonist is the river. The river that is going to be transformed by the building of this dam. And as I mentioned, this is, you'll see in scenes, you'll see rubble, you'll see these high water marks, you'll see the character that I have on that last line there, Chai, which means to tear down. But more than that, the film is really also about destruction taking place in society. In many extents linked with this relocation, but maybe also independent of it. First, the two protagonists live lives of fragmented families. Han Sunming is divorced from his wife, and the Shen Hong character is separated from her husband. More than that, we see just elements of kind of a dysfunctional society. Zha Jiangke's films often have a little element of the underworld. Here that's hinted at by a character who's probably in his late teens, early 20s. I think that he's referred to as Brother Mark. He's the character who loves Zhou Runfa or Chao Yun Fat. You see him lighting a cigarette with a piece of paper that's right out of Better Tomorrow, one of Zhou Runfa's early films. And he's just fascinated with him, and he has these hand gestures you'll see him doing, these kind of things that came out of a Hong Kong movie. And on the soundtrack, I think there's also some, you'll hear some Cantonese cantopop as well. But he leads this gang that goes around and kind of is looking for other buildings to destroy or take control of from other landowners. And this is, again, kind of a organized crime type of activity. In addition, you have in the film this interesting use of intertitles. Normally, if you watch, say, a Zhang Yimou film, the intertitles are almost always referring to time. So in Raise the Red Lantern, they're all seasons, spring, summer, winter, fall. Not in that order, but those four the usual four seasons. In a film like To Live, also by Zhang Yimou, they're decades. The 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the present. Here, there are four items. Tobacco or cigarettes, alcohol, tea, and then candy. Now, what do these four items have in common? Well, film critic Shelley Kracer argues that perhaps they're substitutes for the usual food staples that people have. That would be things like rice and cooking oil and salt and fuel. And if that's the case, then perhaps they're showing that somehow the social order's been disrupted, that rather than focusing on these normal everyday things, we're focusing on something else. Or perhaps their means of addiction or escape. But I'd argue there's another thing that these four things have in common, and that is that these are all items that are used to grease the wheels of social interaction in China. Chinese New Year's, we just celebrated that. We had some of our study abroad students over, former study abroad students over. Of course, we had to serve them candy, the last item on the list. That's a social courtesy. Cigarettes, you'll see used in the movie. You'll see as Brother Han is planning on going back to his hometown, his home province of Shaanxi, he gives everyone cigarettes. Alcoholic beverages, tea, are all ways of fueling social interactions at a time when social order is being destroyed. So I find that rather an interesting idea. So that brings us to a final question, and that is, so this is the title of the movie in Chinese, and that was the title for my lecture. The Good People of the Three Gorges. So who are these good people? Are they the government? Probably not. Are they the wealthy developers making money? I'm not sure. The film focuses on average people, poor people, displaced people. And I think Jia Zhangke is suggesting that the good people is what we think of as good may not be the things that we, social constructs would say are good. Wealth, power, privilege, or any of those things, but something else. Perhaps it's those people who reach out and care for each other in extreme situations such as this. And as you watch the movie, I hope you'll think about that. Who might be the good people in this movie? I think the film raises that as an important question. Anyway, I'll stop here, and then I'd like to open the floor now to questions. Do you have any questions? We have time for a few, perhaps. Yes, please.
I noticed that he used UFOs in Ashes
Uh-huh. Is that in every movie? I don't remember in any of his early movies. I don't remember them in either The World or in Platform. So I don't know. That's a good question. You know, it's interesting. I haven't really thought about that. They seem to be transitional. I can't remember where in Ashes Purest White they appear, but I think they're used, at least in this one, they seem to be kind of transitional. We see this tightrope walker kind of strung between two buildings walking at the very end of the movie. Why is that? I don't know. It doesn't fit what the film is talking about. In the earlier scene, the UFO is a way of transitioning as we see. It's something that both of them see. And I guess the question, I mean, always in Chinese literature, there's this interest in film, there's this interest in what is real and what is not, what is illusory and what is not. And I don't know, maybe it's some, may follow someone, fall in those lines. Other questions? Things that you found interesting, things that I didn't explain very well, things that I can amplify? Okay. The question was, the story has this three-part structure. Why does it go back to this one guy and then not go back to the nurse? I don't know. That's a good question. Her story, he tells her story pretty much to a point of closure. So there's really nothing to go back to. Why he brings it back to Han Sanming, it's hard to say. Maybe Han Sanming is kind of either an everyman or every person that he sees representing, you know, all the people, us as viewers, perhaps. Maybe I don't know, he has other characters that somehow stand in for him, but I wonder if there isn't some linkage to him too. No, I'm not quite sure. Yeah. Question, please. Okay, the question is, there seems to be kind of a reversal of priorities and things like that. Is this a dystopian society? I think it's pretty dystopian in the sense that it's a society that doesn't seem to have, there isn't really a, it's not a negative or hopeless movie, but I mean, because at the end he does go back, and there is this sense possibly that he will come back and be able to get his wife back, redeem her from this indenture that she has. So it's not hopeful. It's not utterly hopeless, however. In some dystopian literature, it's very, very bleak, and there's like no hope for the future. It's not quite that sense. But it's just, but maybe it's a warning. Maybe it's kind of a warning to what might be happening in society. On the one hand, natural destruction. On the other, human kind of impacts of human destruction. Devin? Oh, okay. Are there bad people? Is there an antagonist or villain? It's interesting. We talked about this earlier today with some movies in the film class. As often seems to be the case with Chinese directors, there isn't a clearly labeled antagonist. Because the answer could be a political answer that would immediately lead to the film being censored. Or it's a simplistic answer, which means that we as viewers don't have enough options to consider what really are, what issues are causing problems in the society as we see it framed in this movie. So I think he purposely makes it vague. There are people that are seem to be doing things that are problematic, but in many cases it's due to some larger force than just them. But the director doesn't beat us over the head with it, or even, I think he allows us to kind of try and figure out what that might be. We're about out of time. We do one more question, or we can just wrap up here. Yes, please. Right. Well, what I'm saying is that that's a very good question, Felicia. Usually, this is something we see in modernist literature of the 19th century, 20th century. Here we are in China, about 100, 150 years later, and there isn't any creativity. It's a very different kind of situation when we see destruction, but we don't see creativity. The only thing that's probably would be positive is the building of the dam, but that doesn't seem to be, and some people would view that as positive, flood reduction, you know, electrical generation that's green, but there's a horrible consequence because you have flooding, there's silting problems. One thing the film doesn't, I mean, a lot of the land around the area where the water rises up begins to collapse in, there's pollution and sedimentation, there's a lot of consequences to the building of the dam. So it seems that in the movie there really isn't a positive thing being constructed. If it is, it's the hope that somehow human relations might be salvaged, either by Shen Hong moving on and moving away from her husband into a new relationship, which is hinted, or the possibility of Han Sunping being able to help his wife out. Those are probably the most hopeful things the movie has. We're out of time. Thank you so much for participating and coming. I appreciate it very much.